drunk and stupid is nowhere. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
What are you people? On dope?
Podcasting live from the Boar's Head Tavern in downtown St. Sadie's, Maryland. This is the voice of post-evangelicals everywhere. A voice of sanity in the midst of the evangelical wilderness. This is Internet Monk Radio. Hello out there, podcast audience. Welcome to episode number 62 of the Continuing Adventures of the Internet Monk. My name is Michael Spencer. I'm very glad to have you along on today's podcast. In just a couple of days, summer school begins for me. In summer school, I teach English 3. Now, in high school curriculum, English 4 is British lit and English 3 is American lit. So I'll be teaching American literature to students who need either to make up a quarter or more of what they failed. That'll be most of my students, or the occasional student who just simply wants to get it out of the way in the summertime when they can do that. At our school, you can get one full credit taken care of in the summertime. So I'm going to be hanging out with Walt Whitman and Emily Dickinson and Mark Twain and all those people. I'm going to be teaching my kids how to write a thesis statement and how to revise, be doing a little bit of grammar. And I teach a little bit from movies. I watch Jeremiah Johnson. We see themes of American literature in Jeremiah Johnson. And the toughest thing I have to do is find some way to get through at least the plot of The Scarlet Letter. Getting American high school students, particularly boys, to hang in there at all with The Scarlet Letter is one of the toughest things that I have to do. I used to actually teach through the thing because there are a lot of themes that I can find that are at least relevant, but I've taken more of the seminar approach. I tell my kids if they'll give me 3 hours, 3 to 4 hours of their mind, we'll give them what they need to get out of Scarlet Letter. And then Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn, which is the other required book, is a lot more enjoyable for everybody, though I don't like it quite as much. I actually bail on that book right after we get to the big bit of, well, I'll just go to hell then, if that's what it means to treat Jim like a human being. I can think of an awful lot of books that are better than Huckleberry Finn. From that point on, as a writer, Twain really dropped the ball. But that's what I'll be doing for 30 days, 15 days, and then a break, 15 days. Then I get another substantial break at the end of the summer. So summer school is upon us. In the midst of teaching from 8:30 to 2:30, preparing an hour before and grading an hour afterward, I'm also responsible for daily worship, which means that I'll be preaching probably 2 to 3 times a week throughout the summer and getting other people to preach when I'm not preaching and working with our worship bands and all that. But you know what? I need to have some kind of a work routine. I'm one of these people that if I don't have a work routine, I degenerate. Now, this summer, during my break time, I've been getting a lot of reading and study done. I've probably done more reading and study in the last few weeks than I've done in the previous couple of years. And the reason is I'm motivated. I've got a situation going on in my life that's got me motivated to study. If you get me worked up about something, you know, angry or put me on a deadline where I'm going to have to make a presentation or I'm dealing with something in my life and my family that I care about, I study like a fiend. And that's what I've been doing. I've been reading all sorts of books. Deconstructing Evangelicalism by Hart and Is the Reformation Over by Noel, and I'm going to be writing a book review here in a couple of days of A High View of Scripture by Craig Allert, which is a book I'm really excited about reviewing. And so it's been a productive break, but I'm all set to get back to work and to some routine of worship and work and other things. the last few months as a result of being on the Catholic Guy program on Sirius Radio. Most Tuesdays I'm on at 5 o'clock on Sirius Radio's The Catholic Channel. As a result of that, I have a lot of new Roman Catholic readers of InternetMonk.com. And so I'm sure those readers are going to notice that I have all of a sudden started a series at InternetMonk.com called The Baptist Way. And I want to be sure everybody knows what I'm up to here. I'm not trying to evangelize my Roman Catholic friends. I already consider you to be my Christian brothers and sisters, and I'm not trying to make you into Baptists. In fact, what I'm doing in the Baptist Way series is I'm discussing some problem areas. I'm discussing some in-house, in-the-family, dirty laundry, problems within the Baptist denomination that I happen to be a part of, and I'm going to be doing some interviews and asking some pretty tough questions about Baptists and their future and some of the things that seem to be going on. So those of you that are not Baptist readers, not trying to run you off, but from time to time I do like to reestablish as much contact as I can with folks in my own denomination who maybe are not exactly on the post-evangelical thing, but who are thinking with me about issues that are facing us as Baptists. And as you know, having gone back now to the Southern Baptist Church that we're now attending as a family, there's a kind of a weekly reminder and frequent reminder of some of the things that I'd like to talk about. You know, the Lord's Supper is already an issue with me. The fact that, you know, I really have no idea when I'm going to take it again, and the congregation I'm a part of takes it about 4 to 5 times a year. And then looking at some of the confessional language in various Baptist statements of faith about the Lord's Supper, I just have a lot of ideas in my head about what I would like to say. Then there are issues revolving church discipline, which is a subject that is becoming more and more controversial in Baptist life, as a lot of younger Southern Baptists are now attempting to make church membership more meaningful. Many of you are aware that Tom Askell from Founders Ministries is introducing for the second time at the Southern Baptist Convention a resolution dealing with the integrity of reporting of statistics. And that may sound really dull, but what that is all about is about giving true numbers of baptisms, true numbers of church members, true numbers of people who are there and not there. Within our denomination, there is such a pressure on the generation of numbers, particularly baptism and big church numbers, that there are some integrity issues that are being raised, and Tom's trying to deal with that. Well, that's basically an issue of church discipline. Meaningful church membership is an issue of church discipline. And if you haven't noticed, a lot of evangelicals have completely bailed on the idea of church membership. And for them, church has just become kind of an audience thing. You go, you see what the pastor and his musicians and his technical guys have put together to hold your attention. And if you like it, you hang around and throw in a few dollars, maybe participate in some things. And if you don't like it, then you go on that great sport of church shopping that American evangelical Christians like so much. Well, all of this erodes away at meaningful church membership, and eroding meaningful church membership erodes away church discipline. And in church discipline, we're not just talking about corrective discipline. We're talking about the positive experience of, you know, who can be a leader, for example. Who can be a leader and a teacher in a church? I had a friend call not long ago and say, you know, my husband is not a member of the church, but he's been asked to teach a Sunday school class. And he doesn't have beliefs he doesn't agree with our church's beliefs on certain things that are going to come up. What should he do? Well, that's the issue really of church discipline, of, you know, integrity in terms of leadership and teachers. Has to do with how often we take communion and who comes to the communion table, who's invited, and you know, how do we honor what Jesus has done in making one body, but at the same time be a functioning local congregation? How do we How do we talk about that? How do we talk to our children about what it means to be a church member? How does baptism and church membership intersect? Do they have anything to do with each other? And again, kind of in the atmosphere today, there's a lot of eroding of these things, you know. One of the things that I've discovered as I've been doing a lot of reading lately is that when you're talking about the Roman Catholic Church, you're talking about something that has institutional values, and that all down the line, there's not a subject you can discuss in which, in my opinion, the institutional values don't show up. And I won't give specifics because I don't want to irritate anybody, but when institutional values, what's good for the institution, are very high up on the scale, then some issues of church discipline are going to be dealt with very differently than if you have just kind of an amorphous movement, a movement without any boundaries, a movement without any confessional requirements. You know, you have to believe this and do this in order to be part of what we're doing here. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Baptist way in terms of church discipline, how that touches on various parts of church life. We're going to talk about our confessions, our past confessions, our current confession, the Baptist Faith and Message, which many of us believe, while it's usable, has got some real problems. And I'm going to advocate that we use our past confessions more. We're going to talk about church covenants. Something that really kind of defines the essence of responsible church membership. And a lot of younger Southern Baptists are beginning to look at their church covenants and to say that's something that I want to preach through or teach through or bring into a class. And they're quite surprised to discover that a number of church covenants that Baptists have historically used have something to say about don't use alcohol, but don't have anything much to say about, you know, you should attend worship. Or what's your responsibility to other church members? So it's going to be some talk about that. We're going to talk about Baptists and evangelicals. Are we part of this movement or not? How do we separate ourselves from the kind of generic evangelical Borg that is going on today? And if I had the opportunity, I don't know if I'll get to it, I would like to, as often as possible, touch a little bit on how we as Baptists establish ourselves as part of the wider church. And in this post-evangelical era, how we reach back and use some of the resources of the early church in a way that will enhance what it means to be a Baptist in America in the 21st century. So there's a big apologia there for what's going to turn into probably a bunch of internetmonk.com posts, the Baptist way. And if there's something, if you're a Southern Baptist out there and there's something you'd like me to write about, post about, talk about, write me at michael@internetmonk.com and we'll see if we can fit it in. Looking forward to interviews. Peter Gentry, professor at Southern Seminary, has already been interviewed. Wyman Richardson from Walking Together Ministries has got an interview up right now. I'm working on some other ones. Hope that's going to be a big part of this too. A while back, one of the well-known Reformed blogs did a book review of a book that's pretty common today, that is a book on male-female relationships. Now, I have reviewed some books on male-female relationships. I've written a good bit about marriage relationships, so I'm not in any way having any problem with anybody having an opinion on that subject. I hope that would be abundantly clear from anybody who knows me. But in the review, the reviewer put the chapter titles for this book. And I'm going to read you the chapter titles. Now, let's just, first of all, be honest. This book is a very complementarian book. It is a book that, as the reviewer says, the authors want to show how the Bible outlines how men are to live as men and women are to live as women. That the Bible outlines how men are to live as men and women are to live as women. And then the chapter titles are, He Initiates, She Responds. He Leads, She Guides. He Works, She Waits. He Protects, She Welcomes Protection. He Abstains to Protect, She to Test. His unmet desire drives him toward marriage. Hers is rewarded with marriage. He displays integrity, she inner beauty. He loves by sacrificing, she by submitting. He seeks his happiness in hers, she seeks hers in his. He is the primary provider for the family, she the primary nurturer. Now let me say a couple of positive things. I think there's a lot of good things described in those chapter titles in terms of what marriage partners can do for each other and in terms of how good relationships work. I think there is a lot there that anybody who observes human beings, whether they have a Bible open or not, would say that this is, if not the right thing to do, it's certainly often the wise thing to do. It's certainly often the thing that characterizes marriages that have stability. There's much here that is describing what it means to love another person. But there is also here a kind of evangelical mythology that is truly becoming more and more of a concern to me. And that is that we are moving kind of progressively in complementarian thought from the idea that God has created us in as complementary beings to now writing books in which the map of our complementary relationships is drawn with increasing detail and is put most often in terms of kind of polarities, polar opposites. And this to me seems like a kind of evangelical mythology. It becomes, I think eventually, proscriptive and not descriptive. I think it grows out of a lot of biblical texts that are extremely part of culture, and I mean I've heard some wonderful talks out of texts in Genesis about male-female relationships where the culture was completely ignored. Now I'm not saying that the culture defines or erases the message. I'm just saying you got to take account of it. You can't ignore it. You can't ignore the fact that Abraham sent a servant out to by a spouse. And of course you can't ignore that God works within that system, right? Not at all. But you can't ignore the fact that, you know, the woman was dealt with as property. You can't ignore the fact that in the marriage of Abraham and Sarah that, you know, you say, well, Sarah chose to call him Lord. That's right, as did any woman who wanted to, you know, survive, that she found a way to do that with genuine affection and trust in God. That's what we want to imitate, but we don't want to overlook, you know, the facts of culture. And I look at so many things here and I wonder, why would we put together a set of polarities that make it look as if there's a line drawn down the middle of a marriage, and we don't cross over that? I mean, the fact is that in any good relationship, people will play the role that's not only congruent with what they believe is God's will, but also with what's best for the relationship and what's demanded at the time. There are times in marriage that you reverse roles as provider or nurturer. And there are times you share roles of provider or nurturer. There are times you both sacrifice. There are times the other spouse sacrifices. And certainly with concepts like initiating and responding, I really wonder what that means in terms of turning it around to a negative. Oh, it's wrong for her to initiate and it's wrong for him to respond. And then when we start filling that into actual situations, what does that mean? and then the possibilities for kind of a literal power play in some of this is also some concern to me. But I just wonder if we sometimes have done a check to ask ourselves, are we creating a mythology here? Are we saying a lot more than God has said through example stories? And then are we teaching things in terms of principles and outlines, and this is how men should act, and this is how women should act, and God says so? Have we created an entire mythology? And I'll tell you, I don't have a problem with going to a church that wants to affirm complementarianism, even though I wouldn't define myself in that camp. I probably prefer to go to that kind of church. But I mean, if somebody is taking that sort of map and saying this sort of detail, this kind of detail is what God is saying in Scripture, I don't really want to endorse that. Well, there's a lot more I'd like to say about that. I wanted to talk a little bit about Proverbs today and preaching, teaching Proverbs, something I think we've talked about before, but we'll get to some other time. Well, I want to thank you for being with me today on the Internet Monk Radio Podcast. This has been Podcast Episode 62. My name is Michael Spencer. You can find me at www.internetmonk.com and sometimes at boarsheadtavern.com. And until next time, I'll see you.